Greetings, programs.
Hey, Alan.
How you doing, Brendan?
I'm doing great. We didn't do the same hello.
Yeah. I think it's been really fun the last few weeks, kind of messing with that balance and trying to not kind of be the same ones. I mean, we have 119 of these things in the can. It's wild.
That supercut you did was a real wake-up call. I had to reevaluate my life, what I was doing with it, how I was living it.
I think it's ironic that it's a wake-up call because I think as I was doing it, I was like falling asleep because it was so tedious.
You know, sometimes you have to sleep to wake up. That sounds like a tagline for Inception. I don't know.
Well, if the deep meaning can be pulled in at all, it's from this show. So thanks to everyone that's been listening. It was recently Thanksgiving, so I'd like to give thanks to all of the listeners for our show. It's great to have you on board. I know a few folks that have been just listening the last few weeks, and we hope you are continuing to do so.
I'm also thankful for the listeners. I'm more thankful for the ones who've been here since the beginning. No, I'm just kidding. I'm thankful for everybody. And I'm very thankful for my co-host, Alan.
Oh.
You really make the show happen. Like, literally, if you weren't on the show, it wouldn't happen.
Well, I can edit that in post, don't worry.
Yeah. I'm an ideas guy. I'm not a let's actually do anything guy.
Well, thankfully, just pressing record has been working out reasonably well, at least in recent memory.
I had to do it once when you were in Europe, and it was really hard. So,
well, I'm happy to do it. I'm happy to put the show on the air. I'm happy to do a lot of things. I'm unfortunately not so happy to lead off this issue or episode of the podcast with the Fuck the Police segment again this week. You may have been related to it last week or privy to it. We talked about how the grand jury had refused to indict a cop who had killed a black male, unarmed black male. And unfortunately, we're leading off this episode with yet another one, this time in New York. This was the Eric Garner case. I don't think we actually talked about this one on the show when it came around, but I was certainly aware of it. It was the... a cop had put someone in a chokehold, and along with a couple other factors, that guy ended up dying of a, I think it was a heart attack, brought on by constriction of air and blood and a bunch of other things. And it was kind of a big deal because, A, the New York City Police Department has banned the use of a chokehold, so... A, he was already doing something, you know, quasi-illegal, and B, it was caught on video. So it was like, oh my gosh, it's clear as day. This was negligence. This was the wrong thing to do. You know, they're going to throw the book at him. And the grand jury came back and saying that they're not going to indict, which is amazing, especially in light of... the stuff happening in Ferguson. It's just really, really disheartening to see another case just like that. Especially on the heels of the announcement that the New York City Police Department has been testing something like 50,000 body cameras already. So they had been doing that before the call to do so after last week, and it's just a mess because there was videoed evidence of this happening. And if we're leaning on, or our going assumption is that body cameras would alleviate this problem and kind of increase the accountability, and yet the video evidence for this case was essentially like deemed irrelevant, it's not good.
No, I mean, it was ruled a homicide by the medical examiner.
Right. And right.
The having the body cameras is a good step.
Yes.
But that's not the problem.
Right. Right. Exactly. The problem, and we talked about it last week, is absolutely that impunity and accountability problem that's inherent with the police, actually, in almost all circumstances. It's I saw a tweet and I retweeted it. It was great. It was that the folks that have the monopoly on the ability to commit violence with impunity should be held to the highest standard, not the lowest. And it's really that. It's that you know, we were saying last week that there is a price of kind of accountability to wield that amount of power. And it should be, you know, easily payable. It should be part and parcel of being in that position of power, is that level of scrutiny, that level of accountability. And so, you know, we're still of the mind body cameras are a thing, or should be a thing. But yeah, police accountability and just absolutely has to be a thing for this to make any kind of sense, for there any kind of goodness to come out of this. It has to be a real and substantial change about you know, how that level of responsibility works.
I enjoy the character Judge Dredd as a work of fiction. I don't like the idea that it's reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Oh. Well, I mean, you want to think that it's not that they're going out there with the intent to be malicious. You want to think that it's something in the line of duty. Possibly they're worried about self-defense. They're worried about this. They're worried about that. It still doesn't absolve them of the accountability of the action. Whether they, you know, if it becomes that they didn't mean for that to happen, then it comes across as, sure, okay, it's not murder, it's not premeditated, but there are degrees of manslaughter that fall into that, and negligence should count as one of those things. And it seems like, you know, video evidence aside, which it is very compelling, even without the video evidence, you know, the arguments were made that, you know, it was a training method that is now outdated, and so he defaulted to that level of action. It's like, okay, then it still means something. I mean, if you're, it shouldn't be as completely blameless as it is really what we're trying to say. So the one interesting thing is, actually, Brendan, you found that article from Ars Technica, which we'll link, kind of making the point about video and how far it can go or can't go in this case. The one thing that I found interesting from that article was the bit about how their take on it was the local district attorney, the one in New York, essentially let the grand jury do this, because grand juries operate in secret. Who knows what is actually happening or what deals might be going down? But the prosecutor in the case, there are people that are theorizing that he's essentially washing his hands of the issue, because he knew no matter what happened, there would be a Department of Justice level inquiry into it,
and I which feel there still will be.
Yes, there will be. It was announced today that not only that, but also one for the Darren Brown case is going to go forward. So
Darren Wilson.
I'm sorry. Oh wow, I completely fouled that up. Sorry about that. But yes, they're going to look into look into both cases at a Department of Justice civil federal level. So that's definitely happening. I think, you know, excusing yourself essentially from the issue at the city level is not a luxury that they should have. So that's also kind of a fail in the accountability department. And it's just, you know, another one of those things where we were talking about last week. The system is set up in these weird ways that you can kind of escape accountability, and that's not okay. Not a thing.
Accountability is a thing.
Hear, hear. Well, so if there's any way to pull kind of goodness out of that and then kind of realign the podcast in a different trajectory, an interesting thing came up this week that I had not heard of, and it's called the Basic Report. And it's a right now I think they only have one newsletter, but it's an internet newsletter. It's essentially a bunch of HTML pages that someone has hosted on a Dropbox somewhere, and it was made by a few people that decided they didn't just know enough stuff to talk about the news intelligently at a conversation. And one of the things they were specifically thinking about was the stuff that's happening in Ferguson. And so they wrote, or rather cut and pasted, their own news magazine together. And it's unabashedly like kind of stealing from a bunch of other sources. They even say that in the webpage as they build the magazine together. But it's kind of interesting in that they do, at least for the most part, tend to be somewhat impartial, if not even maybe a little irreverent about the news and how they present it. So they do sort of have a bit of a voice in the kind of conglomeration of articles put together. And it's an interesting way to present it. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's not at all journalistic. I think it's just these guys' summary of what's been happening in the news in a way that's, you know, neatly pulled together. I think what is interesting of it is that it echoes an actual physical magazine. Have you ever gotten The Week or seen that magazine?
Yeah, I've seen it at your house. Oh. I may have seen it in the bathroom. I don't know.
Fair point. Yes, I'm a subscriber to The Week and have been for a while. It's actually what The Basic Report is, but it's a print magazine. I'm sure they have an online component too, but it's that kind of thing. They take multiple news sources, kind of cut and paste different parts together and put it together. I think The Week does it from a less fun perspective, you know, for lack of a better term, but they do cite all of their sources, and they for the most part try not to have too much of a narrative or a bias, but I'm pretty sure that's, you know, impossible to not do that. You know, in the same way as the Basic Report does, they have a few little sections which are you know, focus on the like local and kind of state level things, national things, global things, and then they have kind of sections for, you know, science or health. What's really kind of hilarious to me about it is that one of the sections they do, and I hope if the Basic Report continues, they find a way to do this, but what The Week does is they find articles that are written from other countries about the United States. And uh, the I think that the heading for that section is called How They See Us, which I think is really telling from a, and often quite sobering from a, just kind of from an information point of view. If you can see, like, from an outsider's point of view, what America kind of looks like, or at least what American media looks like, it is often awful.
I also would like to point out that in this particular issue of the Basic Report, they have a section where there are things and not a thing.
Yes, exactly.
Things that you should or should not be talking about anymore. Yeah. Uh-huh. And they even, it's the not a thing with an exclamation point.
Yeah, yeah.
They're stealing a bit, man.
We should probably, you know...
We should probably sue them.
Or maybe collaborate with them. I don't know.
That's probably better. Because over-litigiousness is not a thing. So, that seems fair.
That was a neat discovery. I did see that.
Like maybe we can get them to let us get involved. We can take over that portion of it.
That would be very, very interesting and probably fun. You know, that might be worth a note. If anyone knows anyone over there at the Basic Report, we'll gladly give a listen to what they have to say. Maybe we'll have them on the podcast.
Oh shit! We should ambush them. I mean, invite them for a nice conversation, and it'll go smoothly.
Well, kind of a company that was definitely ambushed over the weekend. Sony reported a pretty big breach in their kind of data stores and servers and how everything else works. I don't know exactly, and probably they don't know either, a lot of the details. It's a little kind of sketchy, but what's been released to the public is something like 4 or 5 movies, the digital kind of internal archival copies of 4 or 5 movies from Sony were leaked out to the internet after being stolen in a hacked breach. I don't think they've necessarily figured out how they hacked in. There is kind of some stuff saying that the hackers involved were North Korean, or at least a North Korean based group is sort of claiming responsibility for it in retaliation for the movie The Interview.
I also read that it was a disgruntled employee.
Oh, that could be that. Just as easily.
We're still in the early stages of finding out what actually happened.
Yeah, the movies that were leaked, I think some of them are not out yet. I know one of them was Fury. One of them is Annie, which I don't think is out yet. It might be coming out this week. And then there were 2 other movies that I think have not come out yet. I don't remember the names. But it sucks. I mean, having that kind of breach at that level really, really bites. The leaking of the movies, I think, you know, the leaking of the movies will unfortunately happen almost anyway. But the thing that I found most messed up, honestly, about the whole thing, whether it was kind of politically motivated or disgruntled employee motivated, is that a lot of personal data ended up getting leaked, and not personal data like customers of Sony, but actual employees of Sony. It looked like personnel record level things, so salaries, possibly identification,
social security
data.
Numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, medical records, background checks. There's unreleased scripts that got taken as well.
Oh wow.
So stuff that's still in progress.
Mm-hmm.
The initial report was like 25 gigs of data, but I saw another report that said it was 100 terabytes.
Holy crap.
So they took everything.
That's a really big number. Wow.
Yeah, I think I saw there's an article on Gizmodo that said it was terabytes.
Jeez.
So they're still figuring out what's there.
Yeah, it's really, really messed up. And it really just shows how how quickly and how easily data can be lost. I mean, really, really quickly. If it's all kind of in one place.
One funny thing I did see was there was an internal memo, or it was basically a collection of employee complaints.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people apparently who don't like that Sony makes a lot of Adam Sandler movies. There were multiple complaints that involved Adam Sandler. Like, we're making these shitty movies.
Oh my god, that's hilarious.
Yeah, this is gonna keep me entertained for quite a while, yeah, as they keep releasing what comes out. But at the same time, it's terrible that people's privacy was violated that way.
Yeah, and I think having that data in that kind of way I feel like there should be more like firewalls for that data internally. Like, you shouldn't be able to get to the same server that has HR data as well, yeah, as movies that might come out. I mean, maybe it's not. I'm sure
somebody's fired.
Yeah, I hope they're not on the same servers. It seems a little weird to be a hack at that extensive of a level without knowing where to go, right? I mean, I think that kind of stuff you could probably, unless you were like getting all the information and then sorting it out afterwards, it almost seems too targeted to not be. So, I don't know. Really, the unfortunate part is for all of those people that worked at Sony, all they were doing was working at Sony. I mean, it's not like there was a specific level of risk that you assume just because, oh, well, I'm working for a multinational company. So, of course, I'm assuming the level of risk. Yeah, my data might be stolen. It's like, no, that doesn't happen. It's not like they were working for, some hyper-competitive, crazy, well, I mean, I guess the movie.
No, what are you talking about? Yes, it's the movie.
Yeah, that is very competitive, but not in a like malicious towards its workers kind of way. I mean, it just seems it seems really messed up just all around. So
I would be very happy to replace the Fuck the Police segment with a Sony Got Hacked segment as they keep losing data. If the cops will stop doing shitty things, we can stop talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, we'll keep on probably both those fronts, and I'm sure the basic report will have to develop like a half page, just dedicated to that. So we'll see.
Well, I mean, in some ways, we're like an audio version of that.
I like it. This is I don't know. I have always felt weird about getting like actual news information from what I would consider an entertainment source. Like, I know my dad gets all of his news from The Tonight Show.
What?
Maybe not all of it, but
Jimmy Fallon, the most trusted name in news.
It used to be Jay Leno. How does that feel?
Worse. Can't take someone seriously who wears all denim.
Well, in any case, I don't know. I think if you do get a couple interesting tidbits from our show, that's great. I mean, that's why that's one of the reasons I like to kind of find stuff. And I know, when we were planning the show, it's like, yeah, this is the stuff that people don't necessarily hear about. So it's fun. If you're using us as a primary news source, maybe pick up a newspaper online every once in a while. Browse /r/news on Reddit, maybe.
Yeah. you can either listen to our podcast or wait like 3 days and see it on The Daily Show. Or read it on BuzzFeed.
Oh. If you can
get it first.
Yeah, if you can get it in between the weird lists on BuzzFeed, you can find it. We swear we will not clickbait you, everybody. Clickbaiting, not a thing. Well, another thing that hopefully will not be a thing soon is pain, or at least sort of. There's some research out about pain suppression, and there are already painkillers and all sorts of methods to kind of reduce pain, especially chronic pain, for medical reasons. And it's but they fall into two kind of big categories. There's one that is they suppress the pain, but the problem can be that like your body will get used to that suppression technique. So Advil or ibuprofen, you know, your body will eventually get used to having that in the system if you're suppressing pain kind of in a ongoing basis. And because of that, your dosage will go up, and then you start worrying about side effects and things like that. Or painkillers tend to fall into kind of the opiate style pain management, where you're trying to reduce the pain by increasing levels of other chemicals in your body that kind of increase your hit your pleasure center in order to kind of overflood the pain kind of stuff. But then that can cause chemical dependencies and stuff like that. And so what these researchers have found in examining how pain works is that they've found that that pain seems to come from actually the release of a chemical in your blood, or a transmitter. And so if you can block that transmitter in a way that that does not cause a chemical dependence, or cause a chemical resistance to having that in your system, then you can mitigate or even nullify pain for that. And so it's too deep of an article, because the one I'm going to link is this abstract to like this huge paper. But I think approaching pain management in that way is probably a good thing, because no one wants to be, you know, on drugs necessarily, unless they have to, probably.
Speak for yourself.
I think recreationally is a different thing. I don't think you'd want to recreationally remove your ability to feel pain. I feel like that would be bad.
Pain is a good thing. You don't want to remove it completely.
See, that's
how you burn your hands. Like, that's not good. That's dangerous.
Right. You don't want to be the bad guy in, which one is that? Is that The World Is Not Enough?
Yes.
Not the best Bond movie.
I don't want to be a Renard. Yeah, that's a deep cut.
Yep. But there is research that says that pain is actually good. It's not always something that should be avoided. Specifically, there's an article, and I'll have to find the actual link, but it's talking about how shared pain can actually be a positive thing for people, because it causes people to form bonds with each other because of the kind of shared aspect of it. So things like boot camp or kind of group kind of exercise things. I mean, it's, you know, the joke is no pain, no gain. But if you're kind of in that situation with a group, you kind of foster a camaraderie, you foster kind of a group mentality, which can be positive or can be used in a positive way. It absolutely makes sense that pain is not necessarily this thing that's should be completely avoided or suppressed. It's interesting.
Well, I suppress my pain by watching Star Wars.
Well, there was a lot of Star Wars to watch, or at least a little bit of Star Wars to watch a lot.
Yes.
So we talked about it last week. The Episode 7 trailer, or a teaser trailer, was going to be snuck in front of IMAX movies in a few theaters. And I believe you called it. It was like, it's going to be on the internet really soon, really soon. And sure enough, I think it was Friday morning. It popped up on YouTube officially, and it's for real. It's good.
Yeah, it's already got over 60 million views. It's been less than a week.
Yeah.
And I account for probably 20 of those.
I definitely was at least 5. Because I remember seeing it, and I was still in kind of a food coma hangover state in the morning, and I remember watching it in bed on my phone with the sound completely off so I wouldn't wake anybody. And then
the best part.
Yeah, and then deciding, you know, I kind of gotta hear this, hold on, let me go out. And so I watched it again, and then I immediately watched it again, right? So it was 3 times in probably less than 30 minutes. And then, if you haven't seen the teaser trailer, you should definitely go see it.
Or... Yeah, what are you doing listening to this podcast? Go do that now.
I'm sure you've already seen it because they did get quite a few number of views. But what was funny was almost immediately afterwards, the biggest thing that I would see tweets about was the lightsaber. The lightsaber that has kind of the, I don't know what you call it, the handguard shield.
It's like a broadsword?
Yeah, it's kind of a broadsword style hilt to the, you know, where it sticks out kind of horizontally and across from the main body of the handle. But instead of being like a solid piece of metal or something like that, or a blade, it is a blade. It's the lightsaber blades just kind of protruding out of the side of the lightsaber. So you have kind of a like cross shape coming out of your lightsaber. And I think there were a lot of complaints about how practical that would be.
Well, those people, I would refer them to Stephen Colbert's segment that he did on that particular lightsaber and how it's totally plausible.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, well, I need to see that too.
Yes.
I think the, you know, anyone kind of searching for deep meaning in Star Wars lightsabers, I think it's a wonderful, wonderful exercise. I think trying to turn that into necessarily a practical thing, it doesn't work until we at least get like the plain old lightsaber down. Once we get the plain old lightsaber down, then we can start worrying about practicalities of how to use it and all that kind of stuff. All I want is my lightsaber.
I really like that it showed enough to get me excited, but not enough to ruin anything. Like, that didn't tell me anything I didn't already know, other than visually it looks amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I think the look of it is great. I think without without seeing too much about what's going on, it seems a lot less space based than I expected. I mean, there's not even one shot of a craft with a starfield.
I would expect they're gonna show some space in the movie.
Okay.
I mean, we've seen like 30 seconds.
That's true.
Of what's going to be a 2-hour or more movie. I think seeing that new droid is the closest I've come to liking soccer in my life. It looks like a little soccer ball droid. And I was like, hey, soccer. That's okay.
Right. It's not offensive to me or anything. It's fine.
Yeah.
I did like, of course, I liked the shot at the end with the Millennium Falcon.
That's the money shot, Alan.
Yeah, it was great, right? It's all of the stuff that you liked about the J.J. Abrams Star Wars or Star Trek movie.
You could call it a Star Wars movie. It was the most Star Wars Star Trek has ever been.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I think the shot of the X-Wings flying over what appears to be water is also great. I don't know what's happening at all. But it's great. I mean, you want to see that kind of stuff. So
I don't want to see any more. And we've got 13 months.
Yeah, it's true.
I will call bullshit on them waiting. Thanks, Disney, for making us wait till December to see it when every other Star Wars has come out in May and my birthday is in May. So it's like, oh, they're made for me. No, fuck you, Disney. You're giving Jesus my birthday present. That's not cool.
I'm sure it'll work out. We'll find a way to make it okay.
Well, I guess I get the Avengers, so that's fine. That'll do. I heard something that they're probably going to release the full Star Wars trailer with the Avengers in May.
That would make sense. I mean, it's their property. Why not?
But the other thing to check out is the special edition of the George Lucas special edition of the trailer. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it's great. If you're familiar with the special editions of Star Wars when those came out, they added a couple things here and there that Lucas felt that was not or the technology wasn't available when he originally conceived of the movies, and so in kind of a weird revisionist history kind of way, he's inserted them into the movies in a way that you can't remove them. So as far as I know, there's no way to.
And if you watch it now, even now, it looks dated.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's not good CGI. For the time, it was okay, but yeah, that and ruining one of the best scenes in the movie and changing a character. We're not getting into that.
Okay, all right. We're good. We're good.
That's a tangent that down the dark path.
I think we've even talked about it on the show like once or twice. So yeah. we'll just
once you start talking about who shot first, forever will it dominate your destiny.
But this trailer is fan made, but I was surprised at how quickly this came out. I feel like it was out on maybe Monday, maybe even it might have even been ready on Sunday night. I'm not sure when it came out, but it was only a few days after the trailer was released, and someone has recut it in that kind of style, like adding things to the trailer, and it's spot on. It's really brilliant. I really loved the lightsaber scene in that trailer. It's
yeah.
Don't spoil it. It's great.
Don't spoil that fake 30-second trailer.
It was good. It was good. I don't think I saw anything of note over the weekend. Usually I try and watch a movie over Thanksgiving weekend, even if it's just something I see at home or over at friends or anything. But this year was very kind of busy eating wise.
We've started a family tradition of non-holiday related movies at Thanksgiving. Okay. Last year we watched Dr. Strangelove.
Oh yeah.
Or How I Learned to Love the Bomb.
Yeah.
This year was The Life of Brian.
Oh, very nice.
And my nominee for next year is Blazing Saddles.
That is a great set right there. I love it.
And I didn't see any movies of note either. I did see Horrible Bosses 2, but like I said, I didn't see any movies of note. So
we'll just kind of roll right through that. And then, good stuff. I think that's probably a good enough place to pull the show together. We'll be recording kind of next week and into the rest of December. I think we will drop an episode in between there, as is our custom. Not because we're especially religious or anything. It's more that we need vacations too. So
we're busy people.
We'll make it work though. We're happy to record all the way up to the to the holiday.
Bakhtun in review. I'm ready for the Bakhtun in review episode.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That was a highlight of that Bakhtun. We'll have to start pulling stuff together for that. That's a great thought, Brendan. Thank you. Well, anyway, if you'd like to be part of the show, or if you have things or things that are not things, you know, feel free to let us know. We've gotten a couple of those kind of in the pipe. Hopefully we have a guest or two coming soon. But in the meantime, Brendan, I will see you next week.
May the force be with you always.